Planet Money and The Indicator are looking for our intern for fall through winter. Come work with us. We would love to have you. And it's paid. Go to npr.org/internships to apply. That's npr.org/internships. The deadline is Sunday, July 10th.
NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darian Woods, here with Weilin Wong and...
Patty Hirsch!
Hooray!
Hello.
It's good to have you!
Joining you for Indicators of the Week for the very first time.
We are graced by your presence.
I really appreciate you having me. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Anyway, today we're going to be talking about Russia. Its economy is doing better than expected, 128 days since the latest invasion of Ukraine.
We're going to look at three commodities that are hugely important for Russia and the global economy. We've got gold, oil, and wheat. And, you know, we've talked on The Indicator about how the economic sanctions imposed by the West are not doing a very good job of forcing Russia to get out of Ukraine. But with each week that the war drags on, there's new tactics and new strategies.
This was a hot topic at the G7 talks this past week. So today on the show, some ideas that came out of that meeting, which are intended to neutralize Russia's remaining economic strengths.
Plus, a glimmer of hope for one essential global commodity that's been hammered by the conflict. Here's a clue. You put a byproduct into your toaster.
Patty, this is your very first Indicator of the Week, so naturally, we're putting you first.
Well, I appreciate that, Darren, very much. I'm delighted to accept this challenge, and my indicator this week is 93. That is the percentage of Russian gold that's bought by the UK every year, and that is a lot of gold,
Wait, by the way.
Yes, a lot of gold. Russia dug 314 tons of gold out of the ground last year, which means that the UK bought 292 tons of it. All that gold was worth $15.2 billion last year. And the reason the UK imported that much is because London is the most important gold market in the world. Anyway, this number came to my attention because of an announcement by the G7 nations this week, which of course includes the UK and the US, that they are no longer going to be buying gold from Russia.
Okay, I smell a new sanction.
Exactly. Although this is a sanction that's more symbolic than anything else. The G7 nations simply haven't been buying much Russian gold recently anyway. That's because Russian gold producers usually sell their gold to Russian banks, which then export the metal on. But those banks have themselves been sanctioned since February, which means they haven't been able to sell or export gold, not least to the biggest buyers like the UK.
Which means the sanction is really only consolidating the status quo, right?
Yeah, Russia's having a really hard time selling its gold, which has cut off an important stream of revenue for the country. And the amount that Russia makes from selling its gold each year, about $20 billion, is about the same as what it makes every month from selling oil. But it's still not a small amount, obviously. $20 billion, that's more than the US makes exporting computers every year.
That is a lot of money.
Yes, it is. Which is why Russia's actively looking for new markets for its gold. And China's an obvious one, right? The Shanghai Gold Exchange is one of the fastest growing gold markets in the world. So we're likely to see much more Russian gold showing up there. But some gold producers in Russia are reportedly looking to sell directly to buyers in Asia and the Middle East, which hasn't really happened in the past. And if that becomes a trend, it could actually change the global gold market forever.
Forever?
Forever. It's a big deal,
Whoa.
This.
All right, Darian, that's a pretty big act to follow.
Yes.
You're going to be looking at another policy idea that came out of the G7, potentially as world-changing?
We will see. So my indicator is one that the G7 thinks is too high, $20 billion. And that's how much oil revenue Russia got in May, according to an estimate by the International Energy Agency.
About the same as what they make in gold every year, yeah.
Black gold is obviously even more lucrative. But even though the US has banned imports of Russian oil and Europe has announced a plan to eliminate Russian oil imports by the end of the year, there are still a lot of countries that are kind of saying, all right, rich countries, we're not going to get too involved in this Ukraine matter. You know, we have mouths to feed and we're going to keep buying Russian oil. China and India are the two largest examples. We talked about this on The Indicator a couple of days ago. So when the G7 met last weekend, they seemed to recognize that lecturing other countries to stop buying Russian oil wasn't going to work.
I'm glad they figured that one out.
Yeah, exactly. So they came up with an agreement to explore what on the surface seems like a pretty clever compromise. Put in place an oil price cap on Russian oil. Band together as the world and say, Russia, we will only pay up to a maximum price for your oil. So this seems like a win-win, right? Like the countries that are still buying oil from Russia can get their oil, but in an era of sky-high oil prices, they can get it much cheaper. And that means Russia's oil money shrinks and it's less able to fund its war.
Yeah, and let's not forget that's what all these sanctions are about.
So there are a lot of details to be hashed out. What should the price cap be set at? When will it kick in? How would it work with threatening sanctions on shipping and insurance companies that are involved in the oil trade? Which countries would get that cheaper oil? But the biggest problem of all is monitoring and enforcement. So even now, oil tankers are obscuring their trade in Russian oil. They're turning off their transponders when they go near Russian ports. They're blending oil from other places and lying about where the oil comes from.
This sounds pretty gloomy, Darian. I'd like to know what the optimistic take on how this price cap's going to work.
The biggest case for this policy is that even if it has a limited effect, Russia could be forced to pump less oil. And once they do that, it is really hard to start ramping up capacity again, as we've seen in the US now with its oil industry. So even an imperfect policy could have an effect.
So that's gold, and that's black gold. And Waylon, you've got another commodity for us.
I do. I have golden waves. Wheat.
Whoa. Whoa.
Wheat.
So my indicator is $9 a bushel. That's about where wheat is trading at the moment. And it signals a tiny bit of relief in this huge run-up we've seen in wheat prices.
Yeah, this is a massive run-up that's driven up food prices all over the world and helped create what the UN's described as an unprecedented global hunger crisis.
Now, to give you some context, at $9 a bushel, that's still above where wheat was trading before Russia invaded Ukraine. But it's down significantly from the peak it hit earlier in the war when wheat traded over $12 a bushel. So you think about it, $12 to $9, that's a 25% drop. Nothing to sneeze at.
And we've talked a bit about how food prices were going up a lot even before the war. And then that invasion just really disrupted the flow of wheat from Ukraine, which is a major exporter of grains.
Yeah, they export also corn and barley and sunflower oils. So Ukraine's Black Sea ports shut down right at the start of the war, and Russia is still blocking them. So in order to find out why wheat prices are pulling back, we have to look to a couple of other wheat-producing countries. So where do you guys want to go first?
Let's go to a country that I've never been before, but it's a close neighbor of yours, Darian. Australia.
That's right.
All right. Get your passports. So in Australia, the government is forecasting a bumper crop in wheat. They've had good weather conditions in most regions of the country that grow crops. And because prices have been high, farmers have increased their planting area for wheat. The government is expecting the country's fourth largest harvest in history.
Okay, Australia. So where to next?
Well, we've got time for one more country, and that's Russia. Now, we've already talked about how Russia is constraining the supply of wheat by blocking Ukrainian grain exports. But Russia is also the world's top wheat exporter, and it's looking like a very good year for Russian wheat. Private forecasts are calling for record or near-record production.
Okay, so just so I have this clear, the Russian blockade of Ukrainian grain has contributed to higher wheat prices, but Russia having a bumper crop might now be helping to bring down wheat prices.
Yeah, it's a lot of moving parts. And it's worth mentioning that Russian grain is not covered by sanctions. So that's allowed the country to keep shipping out wheat and other agricultural products.
Right, so an easier time than Ukraine, whose ports are blockaded from getting their grain out of the country.
That is for sure. And, you know, just this week, G7 world leaders called on Russia to allow safe passage of agricultural shipments from Ukrainian ports. And also Russia and Turkey are in talks to maybe open a corridor for grain exports in the Black Sea. But there hasn't been very much progress on this front. So even with the current pullback in wheat, prices for commodities and, you know, food prices in general could still stay pretty high.
The show was produced by Corey Bridges with engineering from Robert Rodriguez, who was fact-checked by Catherine Yang. Viet Le is our senior producer, Kate Kincannon edits the show, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.